Welcome to Take Note. I'm Christine Allen. Speaking Grief is a multi-platform project that aims to create a more grief-aware society. The public television documentary Speaking Grief premieres Tuesday, May 5th at 8 p.m. on WPSU-TV. It will also air on public TV stations around the country starting this month. Our guest today, from home via telephone to observe social distancing, is Lindsay Whistle Fenton of WPSU, producer and director of the film, who talks about the project, how we can overcome the taboo against talking about grief, and how we can learn to better support those who grieve. Lindsay Whistle Fenton, welcome to Take Note.
Thanks so much for having me.
Why did you take on grief as a topic?
I like to work on things that I think can build empathy. And I think if ever there's a place where empathy is called for, it's in the realm of grief. And so just to give credit where credit's due, this was actually a project that a former colleague of ours, Patty Satalia, had pitched years ago. She wanted to do a project focused on people who are grieving the death of a child. So over many years and iterations and research and starts and stops, I ended up taking on this project, and it became apparent very early on in the research phase what a huge gap there was in our understanding as a culture about this experience that is probably the only truly universal experience. It's something all of us will go through.
And I just want to mention that Patty Satalia is the host of Take Note on WPSU-TV and WPSU-FM, now retired. Grief is a broad topic. How did you decide on the focus of this project?
It is a very broad topic, and that was challenging because every grief experience is valid, but we knew that there was no possible way that we could look at every aspect of grief, at least in this first iteration. So we decided that we needed to focus on death-related grief, and then within that focus, we ended up focusing on grief related to the death of a family member. I think our dream would be to be able to continue this and explore other arenas of grief, but we wanted to have a very clear focus, at least for this first phase of the project.
Why is it so important to bring viewers a film about grief?
It's something that everybody experiences, but we don't talk about it. It's really weird. It's this thing that happens, you know, behind closed doors or happens out of sight. And especially in our more recent history, we have no signals anymore. We don't have a way to communicate to somebody that we're grieving. We don't wear black. We don't wear armbands. So when we are struggling with that experience, we're often doing it in isolation. And the only way to get better at that is to open up a conversation and to sort of bring it out of the darkness and just normalize it and validate it. It is something that everybody goes through, and it's not shameful, it's not bad, it's not an illness, it's a normal, healthy experience that every human person has in some way or another.
Why does our culture have this taboo about grief?
I think it's primarily fear. It's fear because we also have a fear of death. So when you think about how we even handle aging, we have a fear of aging in this culture. We tend to put older people in nursing homes. We don't like to be reminded of the fact that we are all aging. We are all moving towards our own demise. We don't like anything that puts that fact in front of us. So it's just easier to avoid it. And when you are confronted with someone who's grieving, it is a glaring reminder that you're mortal, I'm mortal. We're all going to die. You know, spoiler alert, it's going to happen to everybody. And so I think until you get to that truth and are able to accept that, it's hard to interact with grief. And then the other thing is you care about people. It's, you know, it's not a bad thing. I think we care about the people in our lives, and we don't like to see them hurting. And the fact with grief is just that when someone is going through an experience that powerful, there's nothing you can really do to fix it for them. There's nothing you can do to cheer them up. But we try because we, you know, we want our people to feel better. And that tends to be where we get in trouble, is that it comes from a good place, that urge to help somebody, but we don't realize that the help we think they need is not actually what they need.
How is what we think they need different from what they need?
Well, we think we need to cheer them up, to fix them. We like the air quotes good feelings. We like people to be happy and positive and upbeat and productive and all of these things. We we like to label things like anger and sadness as these negative feelings. So I think if you come at it from that perspective and you think if somebody's sad, it's a bad thing, your instinct is, okay, well, I have to get them to the good thing. I have to get them to be happy. So you come into a situation thinking that your job is to get them from sadness or from anger to happiness, and it's just not possible. And so then instead of feeling like you're really there for them, the person might feel like they have to perform for you, or they have this pressure to move past their grief or to this unrealistic expectation that they should be over something in a finite amount of time. But the reality is that the best thing you can do for someone who's in any kind of pain, who's in any kind of grief, is to validate what they're going through. Instead of trying to take it away from them and put a positive spin on it, is just to say, this is terrible, and I'm so sorry that you have to experience this, and I'm here with you. And sometimes the best thing to say is to not say anything and to sit with them. And that sounds easy, and it sounds like it's not a big deal, but if you've ever had the opportunity to do that and just sit with someone as they grieve or as they experience any kind of pain, you know that it's not an easy thing. But then if you've been on the other side of that, you know how comforting that is, just to know you're not alone.
And to listen.
And to listen, absolutely.
Yeah. During the course of this film, Speaking Grief, we meet a diverse group of people from around the country. They've lost parents, children, spouses, siblings, a stillborn baby. How did you find these people?
We built a lot of relationships with grief organizations and reached out and explained what we were doing, explained our goals for the project, and then asked them to refer families to us who might be willing to just share their experience. And so we had a lot of conversations with people that may not have ultimately ended up in the film, but that really shaped the direction of where we went, shaped the messaging that we put out there. So I'm grateful for everybody who spoke with us, even if their story didn't end up airing, but those connections were all made through referrals.
In the film, you also have some wisdom from medical professionals and scholars who deal with grief issues. What were you looking for in those experts that you used in the film, and how did you find them?
There's a saying that I came across pretty early in my research, that the only real experts are people who are going through the experience of grief. And I think that's true. And I think that the expertise in this film from people from grief-related fields would validate that as well, that they might work in a field, but that each grief is unique to the person, that they're really going to be the only expert. So that is how we approached the way we structured the film, is we let people who are grieving tell their own stories. And then we sort of brought in these people from a professional standpoint just to add a little punctuation, maybe a little clarity to the thought we were trying to convey, but really let the griever's stories be front and center.
And I want to talk about how we often make the mistake of thinking there's a certain time after which you should be over it. What did you learn about that?
Yeah, there's no such thing as over grief is the first thing. It goes back to that idea of fixing things, or of thinking of it as a process. And I think if we can start shifting our understanding of grief to it just being an experience and a part of life, it's something you carry forward with you. It's, if you think about how much you love any person in your life, that love doesn't go away just because they're no longer physically here. So there will always be some aspect of that that stays with you. But we have this idea that grief lasts however long, six weeks, 6 months, maybe a year, if you're lucky, that people find it acceptable for you to grieve. And then it's bizarre. Like, you get to this finite point in time and it's like, one morning you wake up and you're like, I'm done. Okay. I'm done grieving. It's like saying I'm done loving somebody. You know, nobody, that's not how it works. Even little things like the language we use around grief. I caught that in my own interviews, where I would be asking questions in the past tense, and that assumption that this grief thing is a process that people had completed. And about halfway through production, I realized that I was doing that. And that I would ask somebody, oh, how did grief make you feel, or something like that, when really, and it should be, I started trying to consciously change it to, how does grief make you feel? Because those words matter. And even little things like a little assignment I've given myself that I've shared with a couple friends is I'm trying to not ever say the words at least anymore, because they're minimizing, and we might mean them in a comforting way of like, oh, at least they had a good life, or at least you had them for a long time. And when you really think about that, it doesn't convey the comfort that you think it does. So I think just paying attention to words is really important. One more thing I want to say just about the timeline thing is the problem with that is that's become so embedded in our culture and our understanding of what grief is, that grief does last for this finite amount of time. It shapes how we experience grief ourselves. Like, you go into it thinking, I get this allotted time of weeks or months or years that I'm allowed to grieve. And wow, if I hit that year mark and I'm still grieving, I must be failing. I must be doing this wrong. And that plays into so many misconceptions we have about grief.
And that's totally, totally wrong, right? According to experts, whatever you're feeling is what you're feeling. And that's what grief is, right?
Exactly. And that's the root of all of our misconceptions about grief, is that they then trickle into your own framework. And it just sets us up for not only then are you grieving, but you're feeling like, wow, I'm not doing this, air quotes, you know, correctly. And that just adds to the pain.
One interesting idea from the film that I hadn't really thought through before is the film makes the point that when you lose a loved one, that's one loss, but other losses follow from that. Can you talk about the idea of secondary grief that comes up in the film?
Absolutely. Secondary grief was one of the things I think was really heartbreaking for me and all these conversations I had both in the research phase and with other people. Because I think if you haven't been in that situation, you don't realize how that plays out. So secondary loss is you lose your person, but then all these other things start popping up. Like you can lose your identity. If you were a parent and your only child dies, are you still a parent? You know, it can change how you see yourself. If you lose a spouse who contributed to the household finances, then your financial situation changes and you might have to move. So not only are you grieving your spouse, but you're grieving maybe the house, the home that you shared together, where all your memories live, and the community where all your neighbors are. And then, you know, that list goes on and on. And this is where what we're trying to do comes in, is a really common secondary loss that people have is the loss of other friendships or family members or relationships that were important to them, because we're so uncomfortable with grief and we don't know what to do and we don't feel prepared. Unfortunately, a really common reaction is to say nothing, or to, you know, maybe you drop off one meal or one bouquet of flowers, and then you end up feeling so uncomfortable that you pull back entirely. So then not only has the person lost the person that died that they're grieving, but all those friends and other people in their support network that they thought were going to be there for them, they feel like they've lost them too, or they have lost them too.
Another interesting thing is that a lot of people will say, oh, tell me if you need anything, which puts the grieving person in an awkward position, right?
Yeah, it's an awkward thing, and it's hard because we've all been there, and I've been in situations throughout this project where even now I know better. I know that that's not the right thing to say, but it's hard because we're really programmed to say these certain things. And let me know what you need is well-intentioned usually, but when you think about this whole body experience that grief is, and this is something else we talk about in the film, is it's more than just an emotional experience. It really does affect your mind and your cognitive processing. It affects you physically. It has all these ramifications, and you're dealing with all these logistical things, and you're so overwhelmed that then you're supposed to try to distill what you need and then have the courage to go out and reach out to someone, which, like, nobody does that. We don't like to ask for help. So the likelihood that that person's going to come back to you and say, yeah, actually, I could really, it would be really helpful if somebody would mow my lawn for me or would take the kids to school one day so I could take care of some things. It's really hard. So some really helpful advice that a lot of the experts and families that we talked to in the film gave was just trying to be concrete and offer specific things, and to just say, you always want to still get permission. You don't want to tread on boundaries, but there are ways that you can do that where instead of let me know what you need, think about things you're good at. So like for me, I'm a terrible cook. I don't cook. I'm not going to be the person that you want bringing you food, you know, in the wake of any tragedy. It's just probably going to add to your sadness, but there are other things I can do. I'm pretty handy. So, you know, for me, it might be, hey, I've got some time this Saturday afternoon. I've got my toolbox. Are there things that I could fix around your house? I would love to do that for you. Would that be okay? Or would it be okay if I took out your recycling? I would like to just do that for you. Would that be okay? Or I'm going to the grocery store. How about I drop off a bag of groceries? Would that be okay? And just give really specific, concrete things, and then follow through on those things too. And check back. So you might offer some three things that the person might not need that week, but a month down the line, check back in and maybe offer those things or offer something different. But the important thing is to keep coming back to that person, because their life is going to be changed forever. And it's human nature. I mean, we go back to our own lives, but it is important to continue to remember them throughout time.
If you're just joining us, our guest today on Take Note is Lindsay Whistle Fenton. She is producer and director of the film Speaking Grief, which premieres on WPSU-TV Tuesday, May 5th at 8 p.m. It's part of a multi-platform project that aims to create a more grief-aware society. The film Speaking Grief will also air on public TV stations around the country starting this month. There are a lot of adults in the film talking about loss, children as well. And can you talk about what you learned about how grief is different for kids?
That was really interesting. We worked with a lot of organizations that specialize in child grief. And I think one of the biggest takeaways for me, one is that children's grief shows up differently. So one expert talks about how kids are really physical in their grief. So if you tell them that somebody died, they might immediately run off and start playing. And as adults, we process that as like, oh, okay, they must be all right because they're playing. But really, that's how they're processing the grief, and that's how they're working through their understanding. Or it might show up as behavior problems, or it might look like anxiety, or it might look like a behavioral problem. And really, that's coming from a place of grief. So just being attuned to what your child's grief, or a child that you know that's grieving, they might express it very differently. And then I think the other thing is being able to talk with kids openly about grief. So, and we have a wonderful counselor from Beau's Place who talks about this in the film, and also in some of our online resources, that the D words, death, dying, and died, are not bad words, that we can say those to kids, and it's actually really helpful to be concrete. And I think the other big takeaway, they said that kids won't ask questions they're not ready to hear the answers to. So if your child is asking you a question about something, it's okay to answer, and you want to give, you know, you obviously want to gauge how much detail you're giving them, but it's okay. If they're asking, it's because they have a need to know, and you can sort of let them guide the conversation. And this is, again, I'm not a child grief specialist. This is coming from greater minds than mine, but just passing on the knowledge.
So Speaking Grief is not just the public TV documentary, but a multi-platform project. Tell us about that.
We wanted to really start a national movement around grief and helping people become more comfortable with it. So we wanted to give people a lot of opportunities to engage with what we're doing. So there is the hour-long documentary that will be airing on public media stations throughout the country. Then there's also a website where we have additional video content. We have a lot of other family stories that are on the site and that are going to be added to the site to really give people as many opportunities as they can to find a connection with someone else's experience. Then we also have a lot of resources on there for support people, for the people who are watching this thinking, well, I haven't lost anybody, but someone in my life has, and I don't know how to show up for them. What can I do? We have a great amount of resources for that. And then we're using social media as a learning tool. So we're putting out a lot of content on Facebook, on Instagram. Our tag is at WPSU Grief. Definitely follow us. There's a lot of great content coming out there so that if somebody even just saw one post, they might learn something that they haven't known before and feel a little bit more prepared the next time they're in a position to offer support. And then finally, this has obviously changed a lot with COVID-19, but we are planning and continue to plan, just maybe postpone a lot of in-person outreach events, definitely some local events, but then we're facilitating events with groups around the country to really start this conversation.
I was going to ask you, I know that you started this project many months before the novel coronavirus was on the radar at all, but it certainly feels like it's needed now more than ever with so many people losing loved ones in this pandemic.
Definitely. And I saw a great headline, an article earlier on in the pandemic that I believe the headline was, "The discomfort you're feeling right now is grief." So I think that's important too. Again, our project focuses on death-related grief, but there's so many things that we can grieve. And I think because we don't talk about it, we don't have that language and that understanding. It was so helpful to see an article just explain that to people. We're grieving not seeing our friends and coworkers every day. We're grieving our activities. We're grieving our birthday parties and our weddings and all these vacations that we had planned. Like, that's grief.
Yeah, our jobs and our incomes and our businesses, if we're a small business owner in some cases. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. You're grieving that loss of stability and that loss of sense in the world. And I think that's really important to name that as grief, because then it gives you insight into what that experience feels like, you know, in different capacities at different levels. So, you know, we're all grieving different things with this pandemic. There's a lot of things we're realizing every day. There's a million little losses that create a very real and a very valid experience of grief. And I think that can go a long way towards building empathy to those bigger griefs and towards giving us that much more understanding when we go to show up for someone who's in a bigger life catastrophe, just a little bit more insight into what they're going through. But even those little experiences help you build that understanding and help you develop that tool for having the empathy of thinking about what grief is.
Well, grief comes in infinite flavors, doesn't it? I mean, we grieve a pet and we grieve a family member. They're not the same thing, but they're both grief.
There's no such thing as a grief that's not valid, that's not worthy of recognition. We all grieve, and it's okay to acknowledge that. You'd asked me about talking about the person, and I really want to talk about that.
Oh, yes. Naming their name. Yeah, yeah.
One of the things that was really profound for me working on this project is sitting across from people and having these conversations. When you talk to somebody about the person that they're grieving, their whole demeanor changes. They light up. It's like it's a tangible thing. It's so beautiful. And when you think about how little we give people the opportunity to do that, we think that if we say their person's name or if we share a memory with them, that we're going to upset them or we're going to remind them that they're sad. And universally across the board, I've had people say, I'm sad whether you say my person's name or not. You're not reminding me of the fact that they died. Like, I carry that knowledge, you know, in the fiber of who I am every second of every day. So you're not going to make somebody feel worse by bringing up their person, probably. I mean, there's an exception to every rule. Sometimes somebody's not going to want to talk about their person, and that's okay. You just take your cues from the person. But most, by and large, every person I talked to said it is a gift when people say my person's name. It is a gift when I get to remember something about them or I get to talk about them. And even if I cry, it's not a bad thing.
That man who had lost his son said that, I love it when you say his name, even if it makes me choke up.
And that goes back to that. We think of sadness as this bad, negative thing that we have to shut down. No, sadness. And I have another gentleman, I'm working on some of our web content right now. He talks about he lost his husband, and he said, sadness is my touchstone to Daniel. You know, there, I might watch my son make his first Little League home run, and there's a sadness that my husband's not there to share it with me, but that's also how I'm able to still connect with him. So sadness is not bad, and it's not, crying's not bad. We don't have to shut that down.
Speaking Grief will premiere on public television stations around the country starting in May. What do you hope viewers take away from this film?
That grief is normal. It's okay. It's not bad. It's healthy. It would be weird and probably unhealthy if we didn't grieve things, because it would mean we didn't love things. And then in the supporter arena, I want people to be able to know that it's okay to feel awkward and uncomfortable. And we just want people to be authentic. So it's okay to show up to someone you love and try to support them by just saying, look, I'm here. I have no idea what to say to you right now. I don't know if there's anything I can say, or I'm not quite sure what you need from me, but I really want you to know that I'm here and I'm not going anywhere. And take your cues from the person and keep showing up for them. The last thing we need when we're grieving is to lose our support network. And so I think if we can just get people more comfortable with sitting in that space of grief, we'll be a lot farther down this road of a more grief-friendly society. You asked what I hope people would come away with. These are little everyday experiences, you know, start to add up. So even within WPSU, because our station has become so invested in this project and it's something that a lot of people have been engaged with and we've talked about openly, I think it's already started to shift our cultural awareness. I know I've had colleagues now who have shared experiences with me, even from the start of this project. I sort of became like the grief lady. So people would sort of pull me aside and share things. And it was interesting because it just illustrated to me, people are never given space to do this. That would happen to me in Uber rides too. People would ask what I was working on and I would say, oh, I'm in town to do this documentary on grief. And they would say, oh, and they would just start, me, a total stranger, they would just start sharing that their mom died when they were 11 or that they lost a sibling. And it was this really powerful reinforcement of like, wow, we just don't give this any space in our culture. So people are so, the second you open that door, people want to be able to talk about this. And so even at WPSU, that's played out. And I'll share, my grandmother died 2 months ago, right as this project was... was wrapping up. And it's been really interesting because I've seen it even shape my interactions with others and others' interactions with me. So like I chose to go to work the day after she died because I wanted a distraction and I didn't want to just sit on my couch and cry all day, which is totally fine. if somebody wants it, that's fine. But for me, it was the choice to go into work and, you know, I didn't have any expectation of being productive. I just wanted to survive the pain of the day. And I did, but I had a meeting that I couldn't get out of and I emailed a colleague and just said, hey, my grandma died. I'm physically here, but I'm probably not going to be able to contribute a lot in this meeting. Like, I'm just sort of hanging on by a thread. I just wanted you to know that. And she said, thanks for letting me know. And I don't think I would have had the courage or the insight even to name that experience and to communicate that to someone ahead of time. And then her responding the way that she did with understanding, you know, created that safe space for me. So little by little, like those little everyday moments of just being able to put it out there and speak a little more honestly, like it really does make a difference.
How has the Speaking Grief Project affected your own life?
I've come out of this with some new relationships, and I think that always happens in projects like this. When you interview somebody, especially on something really personal, and I'm sure you can relate to this, yes, Chris, is that you develop a weird sort of bond. Like it's almost sort, yes, of like a therapy session, because I think it's easier sometimes to be open with someone you don't know who has no connection to your life. And it can get really intense in a beautiful way. And I've really been grateful for the relationships and new friendships that I've had that have come out of this. There's some people I've really kept in touch with and some people who in turn were, have showed me support. When I lost my grandma, I got probably the most perfect sympathy card I've ever gotten from anybody, from a family that I had talked to in Portland who've, you know, I now consider friends, and I've gotten other beautiful cards in the mail and emails, and just this creating the space of where we can all hold each other. It's really beautiful.
Lindsay Whistle Fenton, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Chris.
We've been talking with Lindsay Whistle Fenton of WPSU, recorded at home on the phone to observe social distancing. She is producer and director of the film Speaking Grief, which premieres on WPSU-TV Tuesday, May 5th at 8 p.m. It will also air on public TV stations around the country starting this month. To listen to this and other episodes of Take Note, visit wpsu.org/take note. I'm Christine Allen, WPSU.